Peace of Mind with Christy Wilkie happens once a month here. It is the last Tuesday of the month on It Takes Two. She's a therapist with Dakota Family Services here in Fargo, but they have locations all around the region. Bismarck, Minot. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to the studio.
I love it here.
I know.
I'm so glad to be here today.
And, okay, let's talk about myths about, first of all, we should probably talk about just generalized anxiety because that's what we were talking about before you got here.
Oh, I missed that conversation.
Yeah, well, we were probably because you were sitting in our lobby, but we were talking about how we get scared. Of course, this bridge collapse brings up all the feels
right
about the I-35 bridge collapse in Minneapolis.
Yes.
It brings back everybody's memory if you have been in the vicinity, if you've had a loved one, whatever.
Right.
If you lived in this region during the I-35 bridge collapse, you felt impacted by that.
100%.
So it gives you a little bit of PTSD.
Trauma more than anxiety, yeah.
Okay, trauma.
Yeah.
But we were talking about that anxiety you get driving over bridges, thinking about these instances, the anxiety that you get driving beside semis or driving in the winter or driving in a tunnel that you know water is above you. All of these things.
Yes.
I was like, I think what we're talking about is anxiety. And someone texted in and said something like, CW can help us. I was like,
sure she can.
Let's hope so. Because that's anxiety that we're talking about, right?
Well, part of it is trauma, right? But anxiety can be a part of trauma. Or if you tie something like that and it just brings you right back to where we were when 35 went down, it's a traumatic response. But it does also bring with some anxiety where, like, it's really the worst case scenario if you've got somebody, because crossing a bridge is a pretty common fear. And so you spend so much time in therapy talking about how it's kind of an irrational fear and how many times do bridges go down. Same with plane crashes, right? Like it's news because it doesn't happen.
Right.
So, but a lot of people don't get that. It's like you don't ever get, you guys never report on how many cars made it safely to Bismarck in a day.
Right.
Like that's just because most of the time it's fine. But you're working with someone who does have a fear of bridges, right? And you're like, the odds of that happening are so few and far between, but then something like this happens and they go, see? It's totally possible. And then it's like you're starting back from square one again, because it's like, well, now I know that it can happen. Okay, so now I'm not ever going to cross the bridge if there's a ship coming anywhere in the vicinity, you know?
Right.
So it can take that and set that anxiety just completely on fire. Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, we are warranted in our fears, I guess, sometimes, but we should probably go back to remembering that these are few and far between.
Right.
That is why we're reporting on them. Right. This isn't something that is happening on a regular basis.
I mean, I guess I would say
it's the same way we talk to kids about these things.
Yeah. The issue would be if it keeps us from our daily life, right? Like that, like you, sure, you can be afraid of a snake popping out of a toilet, you know, and so you check it twice.
God.
You know, if like, yeah, if you use the bathroom at a park.
For example.
That's my fear. That's my fear. Say,
totally random example, it sounds like.
But if I could never go to the bathroom, a snake popping out of the toilet and biting me.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Uh-huh.
I am deathly afraid of that.
That's a very specific.
People send me videos of people like in Asia, it's common where like snakes can get into plumbing, like pulling them out of toilets. And I'm like, see, this is what I'm afraid of.
I've never heard it happening in Fargo.
Yet. Right. I could be the first, but but if it stopped me from being able to go to the bathroom out in public, that would be the issue.
100%.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or if it was just causing you like anxious distress to the point where you're like you could make yourself, as this happens a lot too, where it's like you can make yourself do it. But even the act of doing that causes you significant distress, you could still benefit from going through something. Because there's a lot of things that people are anxious and they just like push through it. And they're like, if I can do it, then it means I'm fine. It's like, well, no, you shouldn't have to do things with significant amounts of distress all the time. It shouldn't feel like that.
Interesting.
Are you super distressed every time you go to the bathroom?
No.
Okay. See,
no.
Okay,
you're Gucci.
But if I was out at a park, I'd be a little nervous about it.
Well, understandable.
Be like, I can hold it until we
get
home.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about bipolar. That is where we were going to go with our conversation today and talk about some of the myths and facts when it comes to bipolar disorder. Yesterday, JJ was mentioning one of the biggest myths or fact, I don't know, you can tell us which it is sort of the high and the low lows. Is that what you were saying about it?
Yeah. And how, like, people are like, well, they just, you know, they suffer from depression, but bipolar disorder is so much different. Mm-hmm. And then like, they're on a high, so they're fine right now. And you're okay being at the high, but
right.
You're not.
Right, you're not. And I think that's probably one of the biggest myths. I don't even know if you're going to go here, but that people who are that have bipolar enjoy the manic episodes, and that's most of the time not true. People who are bipolar spend the majority of the time in depression, and the manic episodes are so small, but they're not. There can be some manic episodes that people are like, they just have like increased energy and whatever, and they kind of like that feeling. But a lot of times with manic episodes, there's irritability, there's aggression, there's excessive spending, there's bad relationship choices that people make. And then what happens is when that mania is done, they're stuck dealing with all the consequences of what happened when they were in their manic episode, which just kind of fuels the depression part of it. And some of those things, depending on what they do, can take months or years to work through, depending on, you know, how manic that they were.
Is there only one type of bipolar? Like, is there one type of bipolar? Is there more?
There are more. There's bipolar one. That means that you have to have at least one manic episode. A manic episode is characterized as having like a heightened level of energy for like days at a time. Okay. So then there's bipolar two, which is kind of just like you have to have a hypomanic episode. And a hypomanic episode is a manic episode, but it's not as intense and it doesn't last as long. It's not as severe. And so there's that. And then there's also like cyclothymia, which kind of falls in there a little bit, which is just kind of short cycles of moods that go up and down all of the time. And so a lot of times people don't really know what it is. And so a lot of times people just, well, they're just moody. It's like, no. Like, you shouldn't feel super depressed and super happy, you know, frequently in a cycle like that. Like, it's just not, that's just not normal.
Can you get a test to diagnose it?
You can. There, we have psychological testing there when you do, it's basically a questionnaire that you fill out on yourself about the things that you do, behaviors that you have, the way your mood is, and it will come back. You know, is it depression? Is it bipolar? But we can do psychological testing for that.
And is there a way to treat it then if someone is diagnosed?
Yeah.
There's treatments.
This is the thing with mental health stuff. I think sometimes people feel like when you get diagnosed with something that because they are chronic and they don't just go away, that they're just stuck with it. It's like, well, this is what I have now, so I just have to learn to deal with it. It's like, all mental health stuff is treatable. We can treat it. Bipolar can be treated with most mental health stuff, a combination of therapy and medication. And a lot of people will go a good chunk of their lives without having another manic episode and having their moods be pretty good. Sometimes it can go completely into remission, depending on, you know, other things that are happening in your environment or in your life.
Is it true that kids can't get it?
Can't get it?
Can't?
Oh, we can see it in kids, yes. You can see it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And do genes play a role in bipolar disorder? Like
they do. Not like denim jeans.
Sure.
But like genetics.
Genetics,
100%.
Yeah.
Yes. Genetics for almost all mental health stuff with you know.
Is it all mental health things?
PTSD is not because it obviously you have to have. But most mental health stuff does have a genetic component to it. But like with bipolar too, like you can have a genetic, well, with everything, you can have a genetic component and there could never be something that like happens to you that triggers it. Like at times of intense stress or even like substance abuse can trigger a bipolar episode. And so it's not always genetics. It can be other things, but
environmental factors and genetics maybe.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Something like that.
Yeah.
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 And I'm sure it can still pop up even if it's not in the genetics, so to speak.
Right. Oh, for sure. Yeah. But I think, you know, with a lot of stuff in mental health, it's become so generalized where people just say that something is bipolar, even though that's not what it means. Like, oh my gosh, the weather's so bipolar today. Mm-hmm. Or I'm feeling so bipolar today. And it really kind of takes away the validity of the term. So we always just try to have people be very conscious about the words that they're using and to not always use those mental health diagnoses when it's not a diagnosis. It's just like, no, you just are having a bad day.
Right. I think so much about how we've, you know, we're better about talking about these things, right? Mm-hmm. But we're also now taking it and just, we're kind of brushing it away. Like, be like, oh, I'm so depressed right now.
Yeah.
Be like, well, Are you depressed, or are you using this as a term to describe what someone else deals with that can be incredibly, you know, detrimental to their life?
Right. Well, and also, if there's something that's happening in your life that's going to make you sad, you can just say, I'm sad today, because insert any valid reason here that you have to be sad. That's different than not wanting to get out of bed or feeling irritable or anxious all of the time and it getting in the way of you living your life in a way that makes you happy. It's, we can start to use emotions and telling people how we feel rather than using diagnoses to try to explain how we feel. I think that would be really a great step forward.
Like we were doing with anxiety.
Yeah.
We probably shouldn't have said that. Like
no,
we're
that
scared to do those things rather
no,
than.
I mean, it can make you scared. Yeah. But that would be a good way to say it. It's like, now I'm scared now to go across a bridge.
Yeah.
But if it does make you anxious, like if it induces that anxious feeling, for sure. Like, yes, but that's also a relatively normal thing to feel anxious about.
Yeah.
It's when they have a disaster happening.
For sure. Yeah. Is there one thing about bipolar disorder that bothers you? Like something that people think about it that bothers you? I mean, other than the obvious, which you stated, which is like people just using the term flippantly.
Right.
When something is, if the weather is uneven or they're feeling different moods that day.
Right. I think that it's just, it goes back to words again with me, but a lot of people will say that they're crazy. Like I'm feeling crazy or that person's bipolar, they're crazy. Like they just, you know, whatever. And it's they're not crazy. Like it's literally something that just exists in their brain and they can get help for it. But like there's a difference between just writing somebody off and saying they're crazy than really seeking to understand. And I think that's always the big thing with anybody in your life. If they're exhibiting something that makes you feel like you want to call them crazy, be like, more empathetic in the approach to be like, hey, this is, I see you're doing this. Like, let's talk about that. What's up with that? It's not, you know, normal for you. And like, come at a place from understanding rather than judgment.
Yeah.
There's a question in at 35270 that I want to get out to you, Christy. Our youngest son was diagnosed with bipolar when he was 17. He would be so fun to be around, but when he hit depression, he would stay awake for days and engage in risky behavior, drugs, cheating on his girlfriend, has hypersexuality as a symptom. He was taking trilipil, say this word?
Maybe, I'd have
okay
to see it.
T-R-I-L-E-P-T-I-L.
Trilipital?
Yeah,
sure.
Maybe.
Okay.
But stopped and started smoking marijuana. My question is, will they always be bipolar? I have read they can outgrow it.
He is 25 now, it says.
Okay. So I think when she said that when he hits depression is when he stays up all night and makes bad decisions, mm-hmm. But that's actually mania. When you're staying up all night and making risky decisions, like that's the manic part of it. It's not that they grow out of it. It can be when they get to a point in their life that things are stable or if he starts to feel like things are stable, it can go into remission. And that doesn't mean it goes away. It just means that the symptoms aren't there. I would assume that maybe there was something that was happening in his life that was causing him some stress or that was putting some sort of stress on his body and his brain. And so it just, that the conditions were what it needed to be in order for that bipolar to kind of, you know, come to fruition. But he could go into remission, but it doesn't necessarily go away. But they can manage it pretty well throughout their lifetime. But the trick is, this happens all the time, is that when they get to a point where they're feeling like their meds are working and that they're stable, they're like, oh, I'm fine because I don't want to be on meds. And so then they go off of their medication and then it just kind of starts the whole thing over. And
right.
We don't want to do that.
And then he stopped and now sounds like he's self-medicating with
right
marijuana instead.
Right. And so if you get to that point where you think you want to go off medication, like everybody has that right. You have a right to not be on medication. If you want to see what you're like without being on meds, let's do it. But in order to do it in a safe way, you have to do that under the care of a psychiatrist that knows what mm-hmm they're doing, that can help you maybe figure out a different way to go about it. Because if the meds that he was on weren't making him feel the way he was supposed to feel, it wasn't the right medication for him. But there's a lot of medications that you can use for bipolar. And once you find one that works and it's like, oh my gosh, okay, I'm evened out. Like, this is great. It should make them feel pretty good. So the fact that he didn't want to be on those meds and went to marijuana tells me that maybe just wasn't the right medication or the right dosage
sure
for him.
Yeah, that mm-hmm makes total sense. And I think, okay, so you mentioned something interesting in the middle of that, which was, you know, this coming on when he was 17. is stress, usually you said there was probably something stressful going on that caused sort of this to come up mm-hmm. or this bipolar diagnosis. Is that usually what sort of like triggers the bipolar? Is something really stressful?
It can be. I mean, everybody's different.
Sure.
So it could be that it wasn't. It was just like in the teenage years, we see a lot of stuff too, because there's an introduction of all sorts of new chemicals into your brain when you're mm-hmm. when you're a teenager. So it could have been a number of things, but I would say that stressful situations tend to be a impetus for some of that happening. Yeah,
sure. Thanks for the message. And thanks, Christy Wilkie, for being with us again.
My pleasure.
Always appreciate it. Peace of mind with Christy Wilkie from Dakota Family Services. If someone wants to get a hold of Dakota Family Services, services available in Fargo, Minot, Bismarck, but also telehealth is an option for you
if
you are somewhere else.
Yeah.
How do they get a hold of you?
They can call us at 701-364-2950.
Perfect.
I'm getting so good at that.
You are so good at that.